Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's the Anfield Wrap, Neil Atkinson with Neil Jones, with Stu Wright and with Rob Gutman. Predominantly, we're going to talk about Liverpool versus Sheffield United, but we will kick on to have a general look at Liverpool's first six and a chat about Midtjylland and what Liverpool should do for that. But let's start with Liverpool versus Sheffield United. And Neil Jones, in a good way, even though Liverpool themselves don't play all that well, it felt like last season. It felt like Liverpool finding a way, grinding it out. But it also felt, it was a reminder, the first five games of all in different ways sort of felt a bit divorced from the league season. Whereas Sheffield United at home, the point is to win it so you can win things in April.
Yeah, especially with West Ham coming next week as well. So it did feel like those two games sort of come as a package. You know, get the 6 points out of those. And probably you throw in Midtjylland in between as well to put yourself in a good position in the Champions League. You're right, yeah, it did feel like last season, winning by a single goal, you know, in a game where you've conceded first. I think that, is it nine? The last nine home games Liverpool have conceded first, they've won every single one, which is, you know, pretty good going when you think about.
Really? Nine games we conceded first?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Not in consecutive, but the last nine times.
Oh, okay.
The last nine times they have. Yeah, that's right. They haven't conceded first in the last nine. But yeah, it wasn't a pretty game, but I don't think anyone really expected it to be. You know, Sheffield United to come in sort of dead on the other end of all those Liverpool sort of narrow wins, aren't they? They're the ones that lose narrowly, or they're the ones who don't turn it round when you concede first. So I was quite... If I was a Sheffield United fan, I'd have come out and thought, you know what, we played well there. Good on us. You know, we had a good go there, but obviously when a team does that to Liverpool, then the aim is just get the win. Just get over the line, and it wasn't. Yeah, it was the first half in particular I thought was ugly. But I think at this stage of the season, and probably until the new year and beyond, it's going to be ugly, I think, for a lot of teams. It's going to be about just getting 3 points, just having a look at the league table and saying, oh, they lost at the weekend, right? That's put us in a better position, and Liverpool got the job done.
We want to be excited before Sheffield United are on, because you think to yourself, and there is another universe where, for instance, Alexander-Arnold's 60-yarder goes in, Liverpool get another one, and there is a bit of a cruise to a victory. But there is a flip side where I think you get to see the wear and tear of the derby, followed by the game against Ajax, and then suddenly Sheffield United on Saturday night. And I think, Stu, in the end, that again becomes part of the meaning, part of the whole, this is very much like, you've got to get these 3 points. You do not want to drop points. You don't want to show this bit of weakness. And I think getting it done in the end, in that context, it's a massive compliment to Liverpool. I think they deserve probably a bit more credit from the game, not so much for the performance, but for the depth with which they dig.
Yeah, like Neil, I think there's going to be loads of games like this this season, because I think it's important, just because of the sheer rate of games that we've got coming, I think it's important that we exert as little energy as possible whilst simultaneously winning all the games. So I think I'm expecting Liverpool to very much rely on what they developed last season, and probably the back end of the season before when we won the Champions League, just that ability to kill games, kill them off. You know, we've got in front, and that's the end of the game. Ball's going out, ball's going long, balls. But, you know, one way or another, the opposition aren't going to build any kind of momentum within the game. And I think we've got the squad, but more importantly, we've got the characters amongst the squad to be able to do that. And it very, very much feels like... It very much feels like in this situation, like the cavalry are coming when you see James Milner warming up and about to come on. I think that's going to be the most comforting thing I see all season, every game now. It's going to be like a lovely warm blanket with 20, 25 to go, and James Milner strides onto the pitch and just kills the game stone dead. And, you know, there's... It's horses for courses, isn't it? You know, of course, we all want to see frenetic, exciting Klopp kind of football. But that's suicide this season. That would be absolutely mental. So this season, we've just got to have a plan, stick to it, of you know, getting our noses in front, being really, really, really hard to beat. And that becomes more difficult when we've lost our number one defender, of course. The world's number one defender does become more difficult. But Liverpool, I expect to see Liverpool just adjust the tactics. I think we're seeing little signs of that already, even just with the formation change the other day, which I think we'll all probably agree in the first half it wasn't very successful. But I'm expecting to see Liverpool make slight adaptations, but with, you know, the aim being very much what we saw last season: get our noses in front, kill a game.
Yeah, I think it's easy to forget, because we're all watching these games on telly now, and I think we're all acclimatized to watching it with the fake fan noise on, that these are played in empty grounds, and it's very, very strange. And they are an extension of training games more than they are an extension of proper football matches. And I think it was the first time I went, Liverpool sort of look lost in the way you would be lost, like when you're watching the under-23s, you know, and they're playing in empty grounds. You've got to dig deep here, and this is where the mentality thing comes into it. And I think they find it within themselves in the second half to be back in a full anvil. I think there's almost like a psychological trick that the player with mental strength can do and go, no, I am in a full ground, even though I can't hear things. But I think that first half, I went, Jesus, this is a problem for us more than most. But we found a way. We did find a way. Sheffield was always going to be there. As opponents, they're not as bad as they've been for the last 6 months. They built themselves quite a platform in the Premier League last year, and through mental strength as much as anything, and through intelligent management, and the restart shook them. And they've also had this disastrous start to the season. And I think Wilder was thinking, Anfield is actually a chance for us to build a platform here to go again from. And what we didn't need to happen is what happened with that penalty decision early on, because that gave them something that made them believe we can be Sheffield United again. That made it doubly, doubly hard. I think we score first, then they're shit Sheffield United. But for a moment, they were able to be themselves again. And I thought, you know, we dealt with it. We came through all those obstacles. And in the end, as I think we're all in violent agreement on, it was a really, really important and good win that said so much about the strength in every sense of this team.
What do you think he's thinking with the change of shape?
Well, before kickoff, I looked at it and I thought, oh, what's he thinking? Is he desperate to get Jota in? And then you go, well, there's no Thiago, there's no Keita, and he's got no Matip. So Fabinho's playing centre-half. So I think it's just a process. It's like a flow chart for himself. Okay, so Fabinho's playing centre-half. Now who can play in midfield then? Well, Henderson and Wijnaldum. Who else? Curtis. You go, okay, it's only Curtis left to midfield.
Milner. But I think he's got one eye on Tuesday there.
Yeah, he's both put in the week. But he's looking at Curtis and Milner and going, feels a bit mad that Minamino and Jota are sort of ahead of those two in the pecking order. Are more in a certain sense, they're both recent signings. They're both obviously were promised games at some stage. So that seems a bit mad. So I think there's a part of his thinking that goes, I've got to get one of them involved. It's probably, especially the £45 million. I don't think he's quite that crude. He feels obligated, but I do think that plays into his thinking.
Well, he explained it. He said it made more sense to change it from the start than to do it in the middle of the game. And I think he thought, what's more likely? Are we more likely to need Milner off the bench to sort of shore up the last 20 minutes, or are we more likely to need Jota off the bench to go and win the game? Probably the latter. You know, it makes more sense having Milner as our late sub than Jota and Minamino. The only thing I was surprised he played Jota on the right, because I don't think it did him any favours. I think you could see everything good he did in the game came when he wasn't on the right, you know, drifting into the middle to connect. I probably would have expected to see either Salah or Mane on the right and Jota on the left, and then the other one up front. But it wasn't a great shape. But again, you know, the more you see these games, the more you sort of notice that no one remembers what it's like at 0-0. It's only until the first goal. Like the whole pattern of the game is dictated by who gets the first goal and when it comes. And, you know, if Liverpool score, like you say, if Trent scores that early one, or Mane scores the one where he, after a minute, he's clean through on the keeper and Salah gets there and tucks that in, you could be just talking about Liverpool playing with the shackles off and freedom. So it's hard to be too critical of the way they played with the new system, because events dictated that the game went a certain way. And, you know, it actually could have been even worse, really, when you think about it. I mean, they got a bad penalty against them. They probably got away with at least one other penalty. You know, if it was a real bad day for Liverpool, they could have been 2-0 down in that game.
Yeah, that was a stonewall there.
I think Jota's is a penalty, isn't it?
Yeah, it's as much a penalty as the first one, isn't
it? I think if Robertson's is given by the referee, that stays as well. I don't think that gets overturned by a VAR. So on another day, you could be conceding, you know, a penalty for the handball and a penalty for a foul.
Yeah, I mean,
but the first one's the important one.
The Fabinho one. I want to be careful what I say here, because just in terms of, I would never normally compare these two players, Eric Dier and Fabinho. Fabinho's, you know, just levels obviously ahead of Eric Dier. But there's, when you see Fabinho play centre half and you see Eric Dier play centre half, there's a little bit of similarity then. It's not a coincidence that they both also play the trade in midfield. Even when Fabinho had a great game at Chelsea, at centre half, there was a couple of occasions where we were all, you know, probably sat in our houses, but all cheering. Some great little interceptions, little tackles that he made inside the box. But at the time when he was doing them, I was thinking, and it was great when he'd done it and it was clean and he's striding away with the ball, fantastic. But there is a tendency there for Fabinho to just not be able to help himself and just
to bite.
Yeah, he's just, oh, I'll have a little nibble at that. And normally he wins the ball, and in this case, he wins the ball. But it is the last thing that you want to see a centre-half do in those situations, is dive in. And I thought it was quite telling that once Fabinho had finished arguing with the referee, he then starts arguing with Jordan Henderson, because Jordan Henderson's saying, what are you doing? And Fabinho's saying, I got the ball. And Jordan's dad is basically saying, that's not the point. What are you doing diving in there? Because you're giving the referee a decision to make.
And he messed up with the clearance, hadn't he? He'd gone to retrieve his own header.
And I've seen that with Eric Dier loads. I don't know why, but I seem to have watched a lot of Tottenham over the last year. Lockdown, obviously. But the amount of times that I've seen Eric Dier, he can't help himself but give away a penalty. Just dive in, have a nibble at someone. And he's not timing them as well as Fabinho is, even in this case, because he did win the ball. But you just don't make that tackle as a centre half. And I think Fabinho can be a brilliant centre half in this period for Liverpool, but they've got to work on this with him. They've got to make him be a little bit more patient, be a bit more reserved, and just jockey players out of position rather than actually thinking, I can have a go there.
It's not who he is, though, isn't it?
That's a very good point.
He's a midfield player. He's a midfield player who has a drop-off, we've noticed, with Fabinho. There are periods or games where he's not at it, and you go, who the fuck is he? But he has to be on that front foot. He has to be in the bite. He has to be ready to give away fouls as a centre, as a biting centre mid does, a Mascherano-type figure does. But suddenly, I've not thought about it the way you've put it, Stu, but you put him in the box there. That's a different risk assessment, isn't it?
There was another one, you know, in the second half, near towards the end, and I thought, he's going to have a go. He's going to give away a penalty, and he does manage to hold back, but he gets skinned. It's when, Oliver Burke.
And he gets around the back Gomez of him. Blocks it, doesn't he, the near post?
Yeah. And he gets to the touchline. I'm thinking, he's going in. You can see Fabinho is having this internal battle. You know, it's like time has slowed down in his mind, and fortunately, he decides not to do it. And they don't score, whereas if, you know, he gives away the pen, they probably do. Yeah.
There are great centre halves though who can do that, aren't they? You know, I think if Vidic was probably one who probably give away more penalties than your average or red cards, or, you know, second yellows and that kind. I mean, most of them against Liverpool, weren't they, Vidic? But Ramos gives away, you know, you could say he's rash. Pepe probably is one.
Stefanoncho even for us.
You know, Wan-Bissaka at United is one that, who sort of, you know, I wouldn't want to wash his kit every week. You know, he's never off the deck, is he? But he seems to be able to. It seems to be his game, doesn't it? Yeah. I think it's probably more just honing the timing, isn't it? And not the timing so much of the tackle, the timing of when.
The choice.
Yeah, when can you go and bite? And if you look back on it, I mean, he probably didn't have time to assess it that well, but you look back and you say, Oliver McBurney on the edge of the box. No, you don't need to go. You don't need to win that. He's not going to hurt. Yeah, you know, if it's Kevin De Bruyne, a line up a right foot, yeah, go on and have a bash at it. But, you know, He's played what? Five games for Liverpool at centre back.
Can I pose a question about the rule here? Because I know we don't, you probably want to later dwell into the controversy side of it, but that it's a penalty when it's on the line or touching the line. That's a slightly, is that a new rule there?
No, it's one that you don't often see needed, isn't it? I mean, it's very unusual, I think, to, especially with.
But are they implying that, you know, with a Hawkeye situation on a goal, if it's going over the line, if it's a millimetre touching the line above it, right, it's not over the line. So if you're, well, it looks like well outside the box, but a fraction of your heel is still touching the back of the thing.
I think the thing about it is it's a rare occasion where progression towards the penalty line is actually being reversed. So why this clangs in our minds is normally if something like that happens to a player, they at least manage to fall into the box.
Yes.
Also it feels more, again, a lot of this stuff is about what it feels like. So it feels morally like a penalty if someone's running through on goal and you do them there and all they've got to do is just sort of manage to stay up for another split second anyway to absolutely make sure. There's the brilliant, I was actually reminded of the Chadwick, Luke Chadwick, Vladimir Schmitz one where he's fouled, there was another instance in a game. But like for 15, 20 yards, he's fouling him. And Schmitz just goes, oh, now I'm in the penalty area, bang, down a go. Yeah. And I think that that's the thing on this, where it normally, when this sort of stuff happens, the play's moving towards the penalty area. In this instance, it was moving away.
Yeah, sideways almost, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, I actually think that rule, I don't like that rule, because Gerrard's another one, isn't he, against Tony Hibbert, where he could have gone down five or six times and he thought, well, I'll wait until I'm in the box. I actually don't think that should be a rule. When you have a player who's clipped an inch or 2 inches outside the box, but the ball's in the penalty, or he's gonna, the player's in the penalty area. That's a penalty, you know. That even if the offence isn't,
in my head, it's where the ball is.
Yeah, it should be where the, I think it is. You know, what's he denied the player? He's denied access the player the access to the ball, which is in the penalty area.
Yeah, that's true.
This is a different one. I mean, the rule's ridiculous in the sense that we'll check whether it was in or outside the box, which was borderline anyway. But okay, you say that's the rule, give it. But we won't check whether, you know, we won't ask the referee to say, do you think that was a foul? You know, it was Mike Dean, so he might well have gone over and said, yeah, if it's a penalty, I'm well in, yeah.
Just on this, and all three of you really, you know, in a non-Liverpool, us being irate way, do you think there's a little thing there where Dean, if he's given a penalty, maybe doesn't give it? Because that's where this is interesting. The number of times I'll sometimes see stuff. We literally say it at times, well, if you did that in the centre circle, you give a free kick. I do wonder if Dean almost gives it because it doesn't look great. Yeah. Whereas if it's in the area, he knows it's a much bigger decision. Yeah,
100%. I think you see a lot of referees, and Dean is one of the more showman type referees. They make a big deal when they give a penalty, a free kick right outside the penalty. They make a big deal going, no, it's a foul, but it's there.
A big dramatic.
They point straight away. It's like diffuse it straight away. It's not, I'm not giving a penalty. It's there. And I think Dean did that where he was like, I'm giving a foul, but don't worry. Like, you know, it's only a year. And I think if he'd have looked at it, if he'd have known that was in the penalty area or on the line, he'd have said, I don't know. I'll take my chances, and VAR might tell me it was a penalty.
One of my favourite bits of refereeing ever. I'll come back to it again, Neil.
I don't have any of them.
One of my favourite bits of refereeing ever was when we was the game in Rome when they get the penalty very last minute.
Yeah.
And
Trent
Clavan.
Yeah.
And it didn't look a pen. No. But we were down the other end. We were 100 yards away. We was in the ground. But it doesn't look a pen. And our players go ballistic. But the referee says to our players straight away, I'm just going to blow.
You've won.
I'm just going to blow. But I've given that, but I'm just going to blow. And I do think that at times referees, and what this has done is it takes that context away. Referees shouldn't referee context, don't get me wrong. But I think that this is that's an example of the referee just diffusing it, going, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're saying there. Normally, if he just gives that as a penalty, there's absolute hell to pay.
Yeah.
And he knows that, and that's in his mind, and I think this is a really interesting thing that this is just thrown up.
I also think he probably didn't think he thinks VAR can't intervene if I give a free kick, can it? But for the once in a million it is able to because of the line situation. But I mean, maybe the time of the game as well, wasn't Mike Dean could be forgiven for thinking, do you know what, even if it's a penalty, even if they score this penalty, I don't look, Liverpool will probably still win. And it won't be a big talking point.
Do you know what's increasingly frustrating me? And I can't remember where I read it, but somebody admitted it. It's the nature of the VAR check when it's a penalty, when the ball goes out versus when it stays in play.
Yeah.
So if it stays, I think we saw it against, I think it was the Harry Maguire one for United the weekend. Some of the commentary about it was, well, if it had gone out straight away, yeah, there'd have been a check. That's surreal for me. They've got to have, I mean, I don't mind if that's the rule, but they've got to sort that out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to, tactically, if I'm managing a side, I said, if one of you's gone down and there's any doubt, you just fucking boot it out, yeah, and make them have a look at it. Do not just keep playing on.
Yeah, pick the ball up.
You're
going to have to have a look at that. That was a penalty.
I'm surprised that the teams aren't getting onto that, really.
Yeah. But I suppose, because there's probably the other side, isn't there, that you think, do you know what's far more likely to cancel out this idea of the penalties? Let's go and score. Because then, God, look at the shitstorm that'll come then if we've scored. And then I mean, I've only seen it happen once, I think. Was it Burnley or Bournemouth last year?
Burnley and Bournemouth.
Harry Wilson scored.
Yeah.
And it was like, it went from a goal at one end to actually, no, it's a penalty at the other end. Liverpool did against City where they scored with Fabinho. So and I think the fact that Liverpool scored really, really helped their cause with that. Yeah, it was like, top of the table clash. We're going to go from 1-0 to 0-1. You know, it's,
it's always the rule out of brilliant goal clause. You know, when Wolves equalised against us at Anfield last season, Neto scores a beauty.
And he gave it that, didn't he?
Yeah, and it was a hell of a finish. And then when you see it given off, that very marginal offside in a wide position much earlier in the move, you go, fucking hell, I would have been sick if that... football's got to find it. I mean, I know we don't turn it to this show every week, but it's got to find a way to sort out things like that.
I'll come back to talk about mention the VAR stuff around the way Liverpool are playing in general, Stu. The one thing that happens here is that Liverpool actually take a bit of time to get over it, I think. For the first time, I think, in that first half, I think Liverpool have shown astonishing resilience for a long time playing football. They've dealt with VAR calls go for them, VAR calls go against them. They've shown loads of courage with the offside line with reference to the video referee. I think it's the first time Liverpool as a group are a bit like, oh, for fuck's sake, come on.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I also think there was context to it because they took the whole half really to figure out how they were supposed to play in the new formation, new system that they were playing. The rotation high up the pitch was, if anything, it was, you know, on paper it sounds lovely, it sounds dead pretty and exciting and all that, but in reality it's a very different thing. And, you know, Neil mentioned Jota before, and he very much looked like a fish out of water in the first half. Henderson and Wijnaldum did, you know, as good as Henderson played, particularly as he grew into the game as well, they didn't have a grip of that midfield in the first half. There was gaps everywhere, and you'd find players. I mean, we're playing two sitting midfielders, you know, instead of the normal a three midfield anyway. And you'd find at times Henderson out on the right, going looking for the ball. I mean, he was out on the right when we score from Firmino's goal. He whips a lovely ball in, but at the same time, there is an element of, are we empty in the middle of the park there? And Sheffield United are a team who, they know exactly what they're about. They know exactly how they play. They know their formation, their style of play. They probably dream about it, and you know, I think that's probably a big contributory factor as to why Liverpool, as you say there, Liverpool took a bit of time to get over that goal, because I'm not sure they could navigate their way through until they, you know, we do get a goal obviously from Firmino, but it's not until actually the players get into the dressing room at half time where they probably have a bit of a powwow, a bit of a chat about, you know, how to work this out.
Incidents and goals obviously create doubt, and if you're not 100% sure about the way you're playing anyway, literally 100% sure where everyone needs to be, Rob, I think that you know, that obviously adds. So I think it's, and then the other thing that happens is it gives Sheffield United something to really build on. You know, there's a reason now to stand firm, to be stout. We've got our goal, which we possibly thought we might never get at Anfield. We've got the goal, and I think you suddenly see, as I say, for the first time really, and it's only lasts 25-30 minutes, but doubt spreads through the Liverpool team. No one's quite sure exactly what's what, and it's been a long time since we've seen that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think before the match, the way it was going to pan out in Klopp's head was he'd pulled a fast one and a surprise on Wilder with that selection, and that he referenced it before. So afterwards, he said they had a week's advantage on us because they had a week in training. They would have worked specifically on us, and I think he almost hinted that the 4-2-3-1 was to give them something. He thought, well, if they have that advantage, we'll have this advantage. That was part of his thinking, but it almost was entire reverse. Was Chef you with that platform of that goal suddenly found, God, we didn't work on this, but look at this space. Jesus Christ. And it felt like, you know, I mean, again, we're all watching on telly now, so it's harder to see, but I wondered, there was no midfield there. I thought we weren't dominating possession of the ball. It was very, very strange. Our four ahead of the ball looked just utterly, I thought, where the fuck are they? Mm. If anything, I'm trying to think back, there wasn't really a huge building momentum into our getting the equaliser, was there? I mean, Henderson just does what Henderson does so well sometimes in dead games, is he quickens the tempo. And that ball was a tempo quickening ball that totally caught them unawares when they were very settled in the game, Sheffield. Yeah, it was very strange that first half.
Do you know the maddest thing about it? We had four lads up front and none of them wanted to play centre-forward. That's the, I don't think I've ever seen that. None of them actually were in a position consistently where they could, you know, come short, hold the ball or look to get in behind or even just stay a centre-forward for more than, you know, 30 seconds really. And I found that really unusual. It was like we were trying to solve a problem before a game, whether it be springing a surprise to Chris Wilder, whether it be to just add a little bit more firepower because Firmino's not scoring. But it just seems to create a whole sense of other problems, really. And almost, this feels harsh to say, but almost an abdication of responsibility. No one was actually thinking, right, this is where I'm playing. This is what my job is, and this is what I'm going to do consistently through this game and get after this lad in front of me or whatever, you know what I mean? So there just wasn't that. So the rotation just seemed to, it almost just bizarrely seemed to kill the space.
I think they were all playing between the lines. Klopp referenced afterwards that he'd asked Salah to play a new role between the lines, so yeah, sort of a 10. So he wasn't the spearhead. So I wonder, was it meant to be like two false nines? But Jota's instinct is to come in off the flank. Yeah. So you suddenly have, they were in each other's space a lot, Salah, Firmino and Jota in that first half, I thought.
Yeah. Also, don't forget, Liverpool had trouble with Sheffield United last year away.
Yeah.
You know, it's similar circumstances, really. It was a dog of a game, wasn't it? And settled by, I think another thing that gets lost is their goalkeeper's terrible. Sheffield United's goalkeeper's a bad goalkeeper. And the goalkeeper last year made a mistake. I think he makes a mistake for the equaliser, personally. I think a different goalkeeper, that ball shouldn't end up where it ends up at Firmino's feet. It should end up the other side of the goal. But they came to Anfield, I think it was New Year's Day
the second
of January, yeah. And he didn't lay a glove on Liverpool, and it was unusual. I think they ended up sort of giving away the first goal after 4 minutes, four or 5 minutes, and just sort of accepting their fate. And I think that stuck with Chris Wilder. I remember speaking to some people who know quite well at Sheffield United, and he said they were embarrassed a little bit. They were like, you know, Sheffield United have come with this sort of, hey, these are doing well, these have come up, look, they've got an unusual way of playing, let's have a look at them. And they went to Anfield and they were meek, and I think you have to expect that they were going to come to Anfield with a little bit more about them and a little bit of a point to prove to these champions, to say, do you know what, you know, you got a lucky one against us, and then you held us at arm's length. You're not going to do that this season.
I did the pressures on a stats bomb across the, I look back at last year's game, and yeah, even though we had 75% possession in the game against the game on New Year's Day, yeah, on the second, and they put in 60-70 more pressures in this game, really, when we had 60%. They worked much harder.
They were 5 kilometres as a team further they ran than Liverpool,
yeah,
in the game, and that's at Anfield. I don't think you'll get many teams that'll come to Anfield and outwear because you can run without it being,
but I think that's important.
But that shows that they were physically ready to go at Liverpool.
But
this
also,
time round.
But also on that, Neil, they've had the week's rest. Liverpool have gone to Ajax, and if you're Wilder, that's something you can say to your team. If you don't outrun these, if you don't outrun these, that's all I'm asking. If you outrun these, fine, you should be doing that. Yeah. And I think there was definitely an element of that with Sheffield United, because I think as you move into the second half, I want to talk a minute about Firmino, but I think one of the things you see in the second half is they feel that game is still alive, even at 2-1, in a way that I think if both sides have had a week, or if Sheffield United have had a midweek game, I think you think at some point these roll over, but they don't stop.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Klopp referenced the pitch against Ajax, didn't he? And sort of talked about that probably sapping a few legs that day. And you look at the team selection. If he picks Milner in that game, it's almost saying, this is what game I want and I'm expecting, isn't it? I want it to be a sort of, I'm picking Milner to battle against, you know, what you call an English sort of side. He's picked four technical forwards that he's probably thinking, you know what, I'm gonna out quality them. I want my quality to sort of tell, and it just didn't, you know, to start with, it did in the end.
It's a massive goal before the break, Stu. Rob said before, it sort of comes from nowhere, and it does. It's a great ball from Henderson, just to the point where I was sick of crosses. He whacks that one in. Mane comes off, does brilliantly to win the header. it looks a straightforward finish because it is a straightforward finish, but he's missed in key moments, finishes that are as straightforward as that one recently. And it just looked like a bit of a weight off for him. I thought it was really intriguing, the number of his teammates who come and celebrate with him. Salah's got a massive smile on his face, like he's delighted for him. I think we do this thing with Firmino where we decide he's dead cool and he's all right with the goals thing, because Klopp's saying, I'm all right with the goals thing. I actually don't think Klopp is all right with the goals thing, and I certainly don't think Firmino is himself either. I think he'll be made up that he's got that one to start his season.
Yeah, I don't think Klopp's all right with the goal thing either. I think that's what I was getting at before when I was saying, really, that, you know, whether to solve a problem, you're putting an extra forward in the front line. And yeah, and listen, as you say, it looks straightforward, but there's a reason why when strikers go on a barren run and they go 5-10 games without a goal, you end up saying things like, he just needs one to go in off his arse, just bounce off him and go in, you know what I mean? Because actually, mentally, nothing is straightforward. You can be a yard from goal like that, if you like, and the keeper's down, but there's all of a sudden all the possibilities in the world other than hitting a goal are playing through your mind, I think. So it'd be a massive weight off him, and obviously the players around him they'll be happy for him, but they'll also be happy because they'll benefit from a more confident Bobby Firmino, hopefully. He's needed it. If you look at his statistics over the past 6 to 12 months, I don't think they're up there with his previous form for Liverpool. I'm not just talking about his goals. I'm talking about his interceptions, the presses, and he does things like that. They're just not there with where he was. And maybe that's to do with the goals drying up. Maybe it's to do with legs going. I mean, he'd be young if that was the case. But something has certainly inhibited his game over the past 6 to 12 months. So the sooner he can get on a goal run and we can see that confidence with him, and then we can see actually is the rest of his game back to normal, back to his best, that'll be a good thing. So
he's had a strange 12 months, hasn't he? I mean, you remember this time last season, he starts really brightly. He's not scoring for fun, but he gets his goal early on against Southampton, and he gives an assist that everyone's talking about for a week against Newcastle, that little flick, back heel flick to Salah. And he's flying for a bit, and then he doesn't score. And he's getting really doubted in the run into the World Club Championship, if you remember. And it's only around that period that he sort of gets a few goals. I think he scores against Wolves after Christmas and against Tottenham. And suddenly he's back a bit. But he's hit this dip again. He did reference last season himself, well, Klopp referenced that Firmino had actually come to see him about it. So that's much of it matters. And he said, you know, are you okay with me not scoring? And Klopp was like, I'm absolutely fine with it, which is exactly the right thing to say, I think, as a manager. Whether he is or not, we don't know.
I think it's interesting you mentioned that Wolves game. The Wolves game is the last time I think Liverpool score to get a positive result in a match, and neither Salah or Mane score. And Firmino scores that day, and it's a massive goal. Mm. He gets the massive goal against Atletico Madrid, Neil. Yeah. But apart from that, there just hasn't been any. It's a big goal he gets against Chelsea in the mad 5-3, which you can, you know, it's an easy one to write off, so maybe let's just write it off and get on with our lives. I think it is something where I think he needs to go on a little run now. I think he needs to feel like he's contributing that bit, because then I think you will get to see more of all the other brilliance that he can bring. I think that has diminished a little bit in the absence of the goals.
Yeah, Klopp said that, didn't he? He said, when he's not scoring, that's when you notice that even Bobby Firmino gives away the odd ball, you know, takes a heavy touch or gets out, you know, outstrengthed by a defender. If he's scoring 15 or 20 goals a season, you're saying, okay, yeah, we love everything he brings, but, you know, if he's not doing it, then you're starting to say, well, hang on, he's not scoring. And I remember 3 or 4 occasions in the first half when he didn't hold the ball up for us, he didn't buy us time and space, or he didn't deliver the pass on the counter attack or whatever. I think one of the things we're talking about, you know, is it physical decline? Is it just the length of time teams have been trying to figure him out? And the length of time that teams have had to devise something to stop Firmino from doing all the things that he wants to do, or that Liverpool want him to do. You know, there's a lot of good coaches in the Premier League. You know, there's some bad ones as well, but there's a lot of good and thorough and diligent coaches that will have it circled on their chalkboard in the week.
He's
Liverpool's
the
number nine. How do we stop him from getting a lot of the ball? And, you know, I think the positive thing for me is the goal that he's got off his back. If he scores a worldie there, a 30-yard volley or whatever, you know, you sort of go, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, he's done that. He's got in the 6-yard box and got a tap in. And you look at his goals last season,
You know, you mentioned four or five there. Throw Crystal Palace, another one, win and goal. Southampton ended up being a win and goal. Wolves ended up being a win and goal. Tottenham, win and goal. Who's in the final?
Well, I said Wolves before.
Sorry, who's the final of...
Flamengo.
Flamengo. I was trying to Santos, I was going to say. Yeah, Flamengo, win and goal. You know, they were big moments, and that... Hopefully that's the first of the season for him, that he's got a big moment. I mean, he did create a goal at Chelsea, didn't he, the first. You know, people say he's done nothing all season. Yeah, he has done a fair bit. He was pretty good in some games, spells. But that's the first sort of big moment. You say, there you go. When we look back on this season, we might say, that was a big equaliser just before half-time for Firmino there.
I'm worrying, sorry, Stuart. I've worried lately that, I don't know what the stats show, but he doesn't feel like he's getting enough shots away. You can always go with forwards, dry spell, but he's still getting in positions to miss them. I don't feel he's getting the shots away enough, and that needs to come back to his game.
I actually think the goal he scored, I think that really should be the archetypal goal for him going forward. We all know what a Mane or a Salah goal looks like. You know, we can see it in our head, them slaloming, I can't say that, in from wider areas through the opposition defence and then slotting it in the far corner. You know, that to me is a typical goal for me, either one of them. But for me, no, I don't really have a typical goal for him. And as you said, Neil, you know, if he'd have banged one in from 30 yards... Well, you know, every dog has his day, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I think what Firmino could do with becoming, as well as being the facilitator outside the box that links the play for the other players, he should be feeding on their scraps. Yeah. He should be thinking, right, I'm going to do all that stuff outside the box, but then I'm just going to be in the six-yard box when they go through, looking to pick up the pieces and be a poacher. Yeah. Poachers have gone out of the game largely, haven't they? You know, strikers have morphed into something more. And Firmino is something more in his play when he's at his best outside and linking up. But we really could do with a player who's closing down goalkeepers after shots have rained in. Someone who is comfortable in the 6-yard box who makes it. Remember how Luis Garcia used to play in midfield? But ultimately...
Yeah, the best instinct.
My God, the amount of times you'd see him in the 6-yard box when someone else had had a shot, he'd just be there. And I think Firmino has to make it his...
was a bit like that, wasn't he, as well? Someone like that.
Yeah, definitely. He's got to make it his life's work now, so I think. As soon as I've done my link up outside the box, I've got to be thinking, I'm going to get him between the sticks in the 6-yard box.
I also think there's a way of speaking about Firmino that sort of... It's too simplistic. We talk about as if, but he does all that work outside the box, as if he doesn't want to score, as if it doesn't.
That's my point.
It doesn't bother him. Whereas you can keep all that, but you can still have a real drive and a desire to, you know, to go. Do you know what? I want to do all that, and I want to be our top scorer. I don't want Salah and Mane to get 20, 28, and I get 9. I want to get 20 myself. You know.
Yeah.
I don't think it's an either or situation. I think it can be both. And you know, he's had some. I think it's, what did he get? He got over 20, didn't he, in the 17-18 season?
That's 25.
Yeah.
I think he's nearly 30 in the season. Salah gets 45.
No, he gets 25. Yeah, that's so the last 17-18, he gets 25.
Which is more than all comps.
No, 25 all comps, which is really
last
good.
Three seasons in the league, 15-12-9. So it's obviously on the decline, his goal return. I think he has to... I wouldn't mind Klopp sort of saying to him, we can't accept 6 this season. We can't accept under 10. You've got to be in the numbers, you know, without losing you,
it's no game. By the way, you're right, it was 27, not 25. Exactly, so we're close to 30. He gets 11 in Europe. Yeah.
The interesting thing, top 15 three scorers, Liverpool, didn't he? He had three players in double figures in Europe. Which
The interesting thing is, watch his trajectory of goal scoring compared to Mane's. He goes one way, Mane goes the other way.
Yeah.
And there's a degree to which I wonder if it's a tactical emphasis in Liverpool's game, to be fair to Firmino, in that there's a desire maybe to get Mane between the sticks, seeing him more as a striker. Because, I mean, with the way he arrives with the header, he is and the header against Chelsea, he's a classic number 9, Mane, really, in disguise, if he wants to be. I mean, he can play everywhere across the front. Genuinely can play everywhere across the front positions. So I have thought, to a degree, has Firmino dropped ever deeper to give space for Mane to hit those positions? Is there something in that? Maybe it's not.
Is there an element of Firmino having that, what I've just talked about, that mindset of, well, I do all the work, and I don't, you know, if I'm not clinical, if I don't score today, it's not the end of the world. You know, I mean, there was the biggest sort of fog you saw with Firmino, I thought, was Villa, wasn't it, when Martinez gave the ball away in his penalty area. I think Salah just plays it through to him. You just think you want your number nine, really. You want any player really to just go right, touch, bang, and get a shot. And he ended up sort of dribbling either side, and the chance, I think he laid one back to Keita to nearly get his leg broken on the edge of the box.
We sort of written the game off, Neil, but he's frankly awful in the 4-0 at Man City. There's a couple of them where, as soon as it's round the penalty area, everything he does, whether he's trying to set up or something like that, it's lacking a certainty. So we do loads of good work. He's doing loads of good off the ball work. But then as soon as we're around the penalty area, there's a lack of. And I think clinical's a really interesting use of word, because we only really use clinical around footballers with reference to them sticking it in the back of the net. I actually think Firmino's lacked a bit of being clinical in his other work as he gets closer to the goal.
I think Liverpool lack that, personally. I think that's a big. If you're nitpicking with Liverpool, I think that's a massive. They're not deemed as chances, but they are the situations that can be chances. And Liverpool, I think, can be a lot better at it when they've got 3-on-3 or they've got four on three. You know, Ajax was a good example. They had a lot of space in that first half against Ajax, and you think just play the right.
There's a chance before the chance, sent him wide.
The opportunity to create the chance.
From Napoli last season away. There was a moment. I think it's. Is it first half? Yeah, first half. Salah's got it, and Everton. We've caught Everton quite high up, and Firmino actually makes a good little run in behind, and Salah just has to do the right reverse tuck, and he's away, and he just doesn't do it. And it's not a terrible mistake, but exactly, it's an example of a lack of being clinical in a key position where you just have to get that pass right, and the man is in.
Yeah, and I don't want to compare. I mean, especially not at the moment to Man City, because City aren't themselves at the moment anyway. 13th in the league, aren't they? One of those where you look at it and you go, I haven't even looked at the league table, really.
It's just dead quick on that, and I'm going to keep this count going unless they beat us at the Etihad. In the first six games of last season, City created 37 shots that had an XG value of better than 0.15, which isn't great, but 37 shots this season, so far they've had 11.
Yeah.
Six games. Yeah. 37 shots of an XG value better than 0.15, which isn't great. It's a 1 in 5 chance, a little better than that. Yeah. A little worse than that, sorry. They had 37 in the first six games of last season of that quality. This season, they've only had 11 in the first six games. They are not attacking well at all. Yeah. Everyone keeps talking about City's defensive issues. They are not attacking well at all, Man City.
And that stood out against West Ham, actually. There was a little bit of Liverpool about it, wasn't there? Where it's like, just that pass. But I associate City with, if you give City some of the chances that Liverpool get on the counters, that when they're 1-0 up in games or when you're on top,
the
precision of a De Bruyne or a Foden or a Bernardo Silva is just, you can rely on them that they will pick the right pass. Whereas I think Liverpool, sometimes I think maybe they're just a bit more hectic. You know, Jota's a bit like that, isn't he? He's a bit. Everything's 100 miles an hour, but it works for them, obviously. But sometimes I just think,
take a breath.
Yeah, you know, realise the importance of going to 2-0 in a game. It's massive. You know, it'll do you a lot of favours to get a second goal in games.
First half to second half performance, Stu. I've used Jota as an example, but I think there's three or four. I think Jota, first half to second half, I think he works out where he needs to be, and he's for the first 25 minutes of the second half, he's arguably the game's attacking defining force. Henderson, tremendous. Again, over arguably the same period. Joe Gomez, I think, really settles into the game, settles into the stride, deals with McBurnie far better. I think Salah's great for the full 90, to be quite honest with you, but those three in particular, Jota, Henderson and Gomez, in different areas of the pitch, define a pretty good Liverpool second half.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because the narrative after the game was that it was a bit of a scrappy Liverpool win. Liverpool had ground them down. But when I was thinking about it, I think I was listening to a show talking about Man of the Match, and I was going through thinking, actually, I've got quite a lot here of lads who Trent and Robinson, I thought, were really good. Gomez, as you say. Henderson, cracking second half. Salah, I mean, I still don't understand how Salah didn't score. I don't understand how just he's come out of that game without a goal, because, my God, did anyone deserve a goal in that game? It was Mo Salah. That one that was disallowed was... I mean, that was a touch of the Bergkamp's. That was incredible.
The turn for this one where he hits the post. That was like 17, 18. Salah's just like, gone.
And we rolled Maguire that
game. Yeah, Leicester, yeah.
If I'm in the Midtjylland defence, if I'm one of their defenders or in West Ham's defence for the weekend, I'd be looking at that thinking, oh my God.
He's going to score four.
He is really back. Oh my God. I mean, he looks terrifying. He doesn't look like he has to be involved. I mean, he never has looked like he has to be involved in everything in the game. But, you know, when you see him in this kind of form where you just think, instinctively on a turn of a dime, he can make nothing look like everything so quickly, and all the opportunities that are ahead of him. So I'm really excited to see how this develops within the season. I think I said it after the first game of the season on the post-match pint. I said he looks like almost... There's a sense of what he was like in his first season for us. Yeah. I think there's some players who get to the top of the mountain, they win the league or whatever, and that's the best they're ever going to get to, you know, where they're almost a little bit struggling with the air, that high up. He's not one of them. He's one of those players who thinks, I belong here, and I'm so excited about what we're going to see from him this year.
He looks like someone who had a break in the middle of last season, who didn't get flogged to death in a, you know, summer tournament, AFCON or World Cup or whatever. He looks like someone who's just had a chance to recharge and go again. I agree. From the first minute against Leeds, he's been outstanding, hasn't he?
I think he's got his confidence back in his finishing as well.
Yeah.
The player who joined us at the beginning of that season was not the player who was scoring the goals he was by the end of that season. You know what I mean? When we could take a touch inside and just bend them in. Like the goal against Roma, against Alisson, actually. He wasn't that player at the beginning of that season. He grew into it. I mean, you saw it happened to Luis Suarez as well. Got good goals, begat good goals. But I think what...
That's why I'm all right. And now that we won the game, I'm all right with the offside one. In that, in the grand scheme of things, he's done the skill. He's brought it down. He's put it in the bottom corner. Like he'll feel like I've scored one. If you know what I mean, even if the statistic books don't do it. And I feel as though I almost feel like as long as because it's a great finish against Everton as well, not a similar sort of area. I wonder if that's what we're just going to keep seeing.
Yeah, it does feel like he's got a new default goal.
And also you look at. Leeds isn't first time, but it is. It's an early take, isn't it?
Villa's
a first time.
Yeah.
Smash. Everton's a first time smash. That's a sign of confidence, isn't it, in a player? Whereas when Salah sometimes has had those dips, it has felt like he's
lashed
trying to take five or six touches, but before he sets the shot, or he's off balance when he takes it and that kind of thing. So it does bode well that he seems to be able to trust himself.
I do think people haven't spoken enough about generally, in all reports about that, Mane wins us that football match, by the way. He decides to win us that football match with what he does there. Yeah, the winning goal, I mean, it's ridiculous how confident and reliable he is now in those positions. I need to use a cliche, but he's like a matador. He literally stands them up, waits for the move, glides past them. And I know another cliche is a good Liverpool winger has to be like John Barnes, but that is so like John Barnes what he did. John Barnes had that confidence to just be goes, right, you stand still, we're going to move when I say we move, and then I go. But the thing was, the difference between Barnes and other wingers I'd seen before at that level is the quality on the cross is ridiculous. Mm. Yeah, that's
he's
not a percentage.
He crossed it to him.
It's a pass, isn't it? It's a curved pass.
On his left foot as well, by the
way. Yeah. It's a ridiculous assist there.
Yeah. I spoke to Trent this week. I'd done an exclusive with Trent, and it was sort of, we were talking about your ideal football, and we were using different attributes, and I said strength. And he said, look, Sadio... He's got to be in. He said, to be honest, Sadio's in left foot, he's in right foot, he's in heading, he's in strength, he's in speed. He said, he probably doesn't win any of them. He said, but like, I can make a case for him in all of them. He said he's the best physical, I think he said if you do the FIFA card, they have physical. He said he's probably the best all-round physical player. He said, because you can smash him and he'll still control it on his chest and get turned somehow. You can slow down and he'll just go past you. You can play it into space for him, he'll beat you over space. The ball will be hung up to the back post and you'll be thinking he's going to beat me in the air. You can let him have a shot on his left foot and he can find the top corner. He can do it on his right foot. He can be at the back post for the tap in. He just said there's no way you can stop him. He said there's some players like Adama Traore that you can go, all right, yeah, I'll almost... don't compete with him down the right-hand side, but I'll back that he doesn't pick out the perfect cross all the time. If you do that with Mane, he will. He'll do that, whether it's on his left foot, whether it's on his right, whether it's a finish first time, whether it's a header. He's just, I love him. I love Mane. He's just what a player. What a player he is.
Yeah.
He wasn't even that good in the game.
What I think he does for the goal, Stu, and what I think Jota does really well for the goal is he has a look before he beat the defender. Mm. Everyone's decided where this is going before, and this is back to Rob's thing that it's a pass. He's had a look before he beat the defender. I'm gonna. Oh yeah, that's on, is it? Now I'll beat the defender and I'll put on his head. It's a great header though from Jota's point of view, in that it's actually a bit better than it needs to be. The keeper's nowhere near it as it arcs into the corner.
in general, Jota's performance deserves that. And again, I think it's no bad thing for Liverpool to, post-match, to be able to look at one another in the dressing room and think, however well Salah and Mane played, Liverpool have won 2-1 and neither of them scored.
Yeah, I love him already, Jota. There's something about him. I've heard people talk that he's going to be the next one that becomes a £100 million player. He's going to be the next Sadio. And I'm not sure about that. That might be the case. Fantastic. If it is, it's a great bonus. But for me, the energy, the unpredictability, the mayhem that he causes, and I think it's going to be really, really exciting when we see him coming off the bench, you know, with half an hour to go in games, and he'll just change the dynamic of a game.
It's why goals like that one matter more, if you know what I mean.
Definitely.
Because he's got the whole team, us as supporters, the opposition, they know he's got that in his locker, so you've got to really worry about him.
Yeah, you can see he's got the respect of the players, and he's got the respect of his players in his national team as well. You know, he's a really, really exciting player. I don't think everything is always going to come off him. I think there'll be times when he runs into players, he runs into traffic on the pitch. I think there'll be all of that. But he'll be one of those players who you can imagine coming off the bench and just grabbing the game by the scruff of the neck and thinking, I'm having a go at you. And that's always great to see, because we've too often looked to the bench and not necessarily being able to change the dynamic, or even being able to pick someone off the bench who fits necessarily with the style of play that we have. So when we bring in Origi and playing him off the left, now and again he'll score, and we all love him for what he's done with big games, big goals. But ultimately, Liverpool look less effective when he's on the pitch.
Yeah,
we don't miss a beat when Jota's there, which is brilliant.
And you're talking about Firmino, aren't you? We were talking about Firmino earlier about that should be his stock in trade now, is profiting from what the others do. I think Jota's intelligent enough to do that, to say, do you know what? Yeah, I can stick on the right, but I'm sort of know that if I get in that area, I'll get chances. And he's got the added bonus of, we know he can do it in the Premier League. We know he can score 13, 14 goals a season in the Premier League. You get a Wolves side that doesn't score bucket loads. He could be easily, he's got two already. He could be easily looking at 12, 15 goals for Liverpool this season in the league.
I think there's a moment here where Klopp's going to have to decide whether he wants to really build the momentum with this player. Because I know that £100 million player within our players phenomenon, which we've seen with Salah and Mane and Firmino, really. There's possibly a moment now. Jota's come in, he's got two goals in God knows, probably less than 120 minutes. And he's looked at home. If you drop him out now and just drop him in for, I don't know, a lesser game like Midtjylland, or you drop him in as a sub, do you lose something? Whereas if you go, I'll tell you what, actually, West Ham, 4-2-3-1 again. These are now a front four. In the way that we used when we had Coutinho for that 3 or 4 months, because it did work very, very well, that people forget. If we'd had Van Dijk in that phase.
Yeah, they worked Shaqiri as well, didn't they? They had a little go with that.
Yeah. So I think there's a case for sort of committing to getting the four of them on the pitch quite a lot now, and seeing, can you build a momentum, get Jota more goals, get confidence, such that you've got a point where, great, it's any three from perm, any three from four, because that's the luxury position you want to get to.
I'd start Jota in the next three.
That's what I'm saying.
But then I wouldn't be starting him at City. And that's fine, by the way, right now. That's a fine position to be in. And then all of a sudden, if he does start in the next three, there's every chance he gets two goals. And then we're back to this idea of, look how many he's now already got on the board, and then you go from there. And I think the opportunities will come because the games come so thick and fast, and they all feel like big games. If you're Diego, it's a little different, Midtjylland, for Salah and Mane and Firmino and a couple of other Liverpool players. But if you're Diego Jota, it's your first ever Champions League start. I'll have one of them, please. Thank you very much, Gaffer.
Yeah.
I feel now like I'm part of something, and I think that's an interesting one. Listen, last little thing I want to touch on is the two central defenders. I think Gomez settles, Giroud, and he's excellent second half. But it is worth saying that neither Fabinho nor Gomez will play McBurnie every week.
Yeah, I'm made up, actually. You've brought up the defence, because I've been wanting to talk about the second half performance. What we can't forget, and I think what's been highlighted, I think, over the last few days on the telly, Liverpool have conceded a lot of goals since we've won the league, and I think we've conceded joint most, certainly before the last set of fixtures anyway. And what it does, losing Van Dijk, it sharpens the senses around that and makes you think, well, whoever we're going to play in defence, we're going to have to do a lot of work on the defence, a lot of work on the line, more work than we would do normally. And for me, in that second half, what I thought was particularly noticeable was the discipline and the shape of the line. You know, from side to side, as Sheffield United would progress the ball from across the pitch, Liverpool's defensive line moved like they'd been doing line dancing all week. You know what I mean? They looked like they'd they've done an awful lot on this. I think that it was still a high line that we held, but I don't think it was quite as high as what it had been. But the togetherness, the compactness of it, and the way they moved across the pitch seamlessly, perfectly in line, I just thought was really, really a good sign of what's to come.
What I thought you noticed second half especially, Neil, was Gomez acting as the sweeper centre-half.
Yeah.
I think when he plays the Van Dijk, there's a bit more of an onus for him to be the front-foot centre-half, and it may not actually suit him. I thought he was sweeping up behind Fabinho, sensing when Fabinho were gone, arcing his run so he could attack the ball from behind rather than lose out in a standing jump. I think these are small details, but I think the part of why his performance improves markedly second-half, and I thought he was excellent.
Yeah, I thought the best game I've seen Joe Gomez have for Liverpool ever was against Everton in the FA Cup last year when he played with Nat Phillips. And I thought he stepped up and led the defence. And probably in a way that you didn't think he could, because he's such a nice guy and he's not a bullying centre back. He's a cultured one, isn't he? He's more Daniel Agger than Martin Skrtel, you know, if you want to use that comparison. But I thought he looked in the second half like he was enjoying it. He looked like he was enjoying having to do the ugly things. You know, he makes a good block off the one where Bear gets in. There was a lot of lovely sort of good positionings in the sort of channels on the left corner of his box, that kind of thing. He wasn't taking any silly risks. And you look back, really, did Alisson do anything? Did Alisson have a say? I think a
couple of punches.
One punch, yeah. You know, and obviously a penalty that he's conceded, that he's conceded from. So you have to say a job well done by the defence. I thought Trent in Amsterdam was brilliant in the second half.
Yeah.
In terms of in that, and you could tell, I think, that he was focusing on it. Almost he's thinking about it.
He's defending.
Crosses and I think he looks, touch wood, like he's improved in the air, I think, as a player. And I think Joe Gomez and him, that was seen as a sort of a weak spot, wasn't it? The diagonal out to the Liverpool's right or hitting that channel. Well, hopefully they've heard that talk as well and they're willing to go and step up and make sure it's not a weakness.
The hug from Gomez to Alisson after the game a great example of, I think, even when Alisson doesn't have to do an awful lot in the game.
I was glad to see you.
Oh my God, just the impact he has on everyone. This
calming. Other fella's been absolutely putting me in all sorts of bother.
You said, Neil said in another show last week, I think it was just like if you can break Joe Gomez within 1 minute of a Champions League game, and Adrian managed to break Joe Gomez's sort of, you know, nice exterior, and you're just like, what are you doing? it must have been nice for him. I mean, we don't want to dig Adrian out too much. He's not Alisson, but yeah, it's just there's something far better about having.
I think losing Van Dijk brought forward the inquiry into the defence that we'd been brewing, because we've been wretched with Van Dijk in defence. He's there at the scene of the crime against Leeds and against Villa. So it almost, we had to change something. So I'm not saying Van Dijk's injury does not suit us at all, but it suits us that we're restructuring the defence at a position where we're actually restructuring ourselves as a team defensively.
All right, then, moving forwards, I think in general as well, just in general, does everyone feel like as though we're even though at times we haven't been great and there is the Villa anomaly, does everyone just feel like we're actually just playing quite well and it's sort of not getting, we've just praised a lot of footballers in a number of games across the board, and I think it's quite interesting.
The Villa game has the tendency to sort of wipe out all that goodwill, doesn't it?
I think we're building up ahead of steam, and I'm not saying someone's going to get tonked one of these days, because we've tonked one or two teams,
Moyes is coming, isn't he? So
it's going to be a really hard game. They're playing really well. Mikel Antonio going off with a little bit of a hamstring injury against Manchester City. Please let that not just be a precaution. Let that be 10 days, just 10 days, because he's brilliant. He's the best player in Europe.
He's such a good player, Mikel Antonio. I was thinking of all the Liverpool teams before this one I've watched where I would have had Mikel Antonio any day of the week.
United should have gone for him. In all seriousness,
he's got a lot of Mane tendencies in him that, you know, you can leave him on his own with two defenders and you can fire one up to him, and he might not score, but he'll make something.
He'll do the heads in. He'll make them work.
Yeah, he'll rattle them a little bit, and he'll
he seems sound as well, doesn't he? He seems like a good great in the dressing room.
Yeah, the great interview he gave last season, was it when they beat Chelsea, and he gave this real good interview, didn't he? I like him. What a goal.
They've got 4 or 5. The two Czech lads who've come in look like born winners for them because they both come from league winning teams and they look terrific as well. And Rice has settled. It'll be difficult against West Ham United. So, you know, if Mikel just needs to freshen up, if you're listening, Mikel, I think it's a bit, I'm saying that hamstring's a bit tighter than you think, lads, and just have a little think about it.
Can't take a risk.
You can't take a risk. Very quickly, Michelin, how many changes are you making, Roberto?
I think Klopp's going to want to make quite a lot. So I think I'd be surprised if there's not five minimum, maybe more.
Five. Go on then.
I don't think.
All right, what do you think you'll do with centre-half?
I don't think he's got much choice there because I doubt Joel Matip's ready and he's taking zero risk with Joel Matip. So he's probably doing nothing at centre-half. I think there's a sneaky possibility that he gives Trent a little rest and brings Nico in. I think there's a chance he does that. I could see that. I think Curtis Jones will get another go. I think there's a start for Curtis. The big question, of course, is what is the status of Naby Keita and Thiago? Because if they're ready, he's going to want to give them minutes. If they're not, I don't. Who's to say? It could be very similar to it. Could be Milner, Curtis Jones, and Wijnaldum as the midfield. And I've got a feeling we you and I've talked about this. He could reverse that front three substitute thing and go Minamino, Jota, Shaqiri start, and then flip them out on 55, 60. So I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think any of the three that were out, I don't think they'll play. Trini not start. Thiago Matip and Keita.
What's wrong with them, Neil? Do we know?
Well,
we know what
Thiago's got a knee problem. Yeah. Matip's got a leg muscle problem. I don't know about Keita. Don't think we ever know about Keita, do we? He's always...
No.
There seems to be a lot of small issues, it always feels like with Keita.
I thought he'd been Klopp's head out the last appearances where he hooked him in half time in his last game, didn't he? I just think
Villa.
I think Klopp just at that point thought, as far as I'm concerned, you're injured. I don't want to see you for a while.
I'm not though. Yeah, I agree with regards to potentially a Nico Williams starting. I think
Curtis,
Curtis was hooked at half time in the last game and it would be a nice show for him, I think, to say that wasn't your chance gone, you know, here's another one, you know, at Anfield, seemingly against lesser opposition. I think the way he spoke, I asked him about Jota and his performance and he was quick to sort of bring Shaqiri and Minamino into the conversation about how well they played in Amsterdam. I wouldn't be surprised to see one or both of those two as well in the side, maybe 4-2-3-1 with Shaqiri on the right and Minamino and whoever, you know, Minamino is the 10 behind whoever, whether it's Salah, Mane or Firmino.
Against it all, is Salah's going to go, I do want to win the Golden Boot, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I think Origi might get a game. If Origi doesn't get a game in this one, what are we doing? So I think it'll be Origi.
The Origi thing is, Stu, just on this dead quick, is it wasn't as though there was loads of noise about him going in the summer. So we've kept him around for a bit of a reason. It doesn't feel like Liverpool are trying to force him out the door or anything like that. Maybe Neil knows otherwise, but it didn't see. I think there's an offer they'd have taken, but now he's here. So I think you've got to, it does become, if you're not using him in this game, if he's not even making the bench in this one, when are you using
him? He
was on the bench Saturday.
So I think there's limited options in midfield as has been discussed. So I wouldn't be surprised if we do go 4-2-3-1 or if, with the same personnel, if I give you the personnel first of all, I think it'll be Origi up front. I think it'll be Shaqiri, Minamino and Jota, and in midfield I think the only options we really seem to have, as we've said, is Milner and Jones, unless he's going with someone from the league first team. So I think those players will play, but you could well end up with Minamino playing not as a 10 but more as an 8 alongside Jones with Milner holding. That's probably what I'd do, and maybe one change in the defence, whether that be Trent, as you've said, for Nico Williams, or one change at centre half. But I think only if I was going to make a change defence, it'd only be one, but the rest I'd just have completely different lads.
It's worth saying just dead fast as we sum this up, Neil, it's the 5 sub thing. So he can start a certain 11, he can have all the big hitters on the bench, whatever you define the big hitters as, and he can know that he can change any of them on 60 if the game's not going as he'd like.
Yeah, but also, I mean, what we haven't discussed really is, if you win that game, you're taking pressure off the rest of your season at some point, because Liverpool have gone down to the wire in the last two seasons in the group stage. They've had to win the last game to go through.
Oh, they've got to win,
You know, if they can win the first four this season, then you've got all your opportunities then, haven't you? To Origi can play the last two group games and start play 90 in both of them. You can leave Salah at home and not travel over to
Midtjylland a bit.
So I think the balance is there to make changes, but also don't mess up. They've missed out in game games last, you know, think of Red Star Belgrade. They went away, didn't they? Made a lot of changes and got beaten. It put pressure. They ended up having to beat Napoli at Anfield. They didn't take any points off. They put 1 point out of six off Napoli, didn't they? They drew a home against them last season and missed the chance. So I wouldn't be, I don't want to say tossing it off, but I wouldn't be sort of saying, listen, you know, this is a gimme. I think there still needs to be a smattering of a first 11 in there with changes.
Okay, thank you very much to Neil, to Stu and to Rob. And if you donate to the food banks rather than pay the money for the pay-per-view, good on you for that. It was wonderful to see the amount of money that was raised there, right the way across the whole spectrum of the food banks in the Liverpool City region. But obviously the fan support and food banks did ever so well out of it. It's worth bearing in mind, we don't know what they're going to do with the next load of Premier League games yet in November. They haven't announced that yet, but currently Leicester is down as a 3 p.m. kickoff, so that one might well be the same arrangement. We'll let you know more on that when we do, but you'll probably find us ahead of us anyway. No one tells us anything. Thank you very much to Neil Jones, to Stu Wright and to Rob Gutman. It was a belter. Sports Social Podcast Network.